thinking about the good things to come. And I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, I've been smiling lately, dreaming about the world at one. And I believe it could be someday it's going to come. 'Cause out on the edge of darkness, there rides the peace train. Oh, peace train, take this country, come take me home again. Now, I've been smiling lately, thinking about the good things to come. And I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, peace train sounding louder.
Ride on the peace train.
Hello, folks, and welcome to the Peace and Social Justice Show. My name's Nicholas Jackson. This is the CBJC 30 segment, where we take the first 30 minutes of the show and talk about the news and events going on at the Peace and Justice Center, as well as what's going on with our community allies. And today we'll be talking with Charles Withune and Rain, and we'll be talking first with Charles. So Jacob is going to take the interview with Charles. And before that, we do need to read our disclaimer here. The opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. So just keep that in mind. Of course, we have the freedom to express all our opinions here, and we're very grateful to KZFR for allowing us to do that. So, Jacob, why don't you take it away with Charles?
Yeah, I'd love to do that. Anyway, how are you doing today?
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome. So I guess we should get started with the first question. So I guess one thing to ask would be, what's the story of Simplicity Village?
Simplicity Village is an idea born of the homeless crisis that we find ourselves in about 4 years ago.
Right.
Bob Trausch and Leslie Johnson visited a number of tiny house villages in the Northwest and came back to Chico and proposed a tiny home village in Chico, a place where you could have detached sleeping cabins and shared amenities, where people could live very inexpensively and have gardening and all kinds of activities during the day, and live in a little more tribal lifestyle that became this extended family. Following examples they had seen in Eugene and Portland and Seattle and Olympia. And they were turned down flat by a liberal city council.
Wow.
Said no. Don't even want to talk about it. It was going to be too debatable of an issue. So they said, okay, we'll work on housing now. And between then and now, Chat has now leasing 18 houses where we house about 65 people that were homeless or on the brink of being homeless, just month-to-month expenses of the bedroom, instead of having a person have to come up with first and last and deposit and a credit score. And, they go through Chat and are able to rent the bedrooms month-to-month. And just lately, in the last year and a half now, we've rekindled the idea, and we are looking for property. We're in the middle of talking to one willing property owner. We hope to have an agreement on some property before too long. One place or another. And then I expect that we're going to have the formal proposal in front of the city in the next few months.
Wow, all right.
And at that point, hopefully we can fill the city council chambers and talk to your friends and let's give this idea that's working so well in other communities a try here in Chico so we can get more people housed right away. It's the only, Simplicity Village is the only program in front of the city now that is offering 30 new housing units this year.
Right.
There's no other program that's offering new housing units. We are in the middle of the most urgent and tragic human crisis of our lives.
Yeah.
That people don't have enough places to just to be. We're offering a secure, healthy, a little more tribal environment that is working in other communities that we have the experience to manage. We should give it a shot here in Chico so we can help get some people off the street.
Yeah, so it sounds like you'll be helping out quite a number of people with that. So I guess another thing I should ask you about is could you explain to our audience what you do with Chico Tree Advocates?
Chico Tree Advocates, just yesterday, one of our members noticed some trenching on 10th Street within a foot of some majestic, beautiful trees that were, you know, really old trees. And it's illegal. If anybody sees any digging activity that breaks a root bigger than an inch and a half in diameter, they need a permit. They need to call the city. They need to get a arborist out there. You're not allowed to damage City of Chico street trees. People go, oh, you know, it's just a tree. No. It's part of our environment. It's part of what makes Chico livable.
Right.
And they belong to you and me. It's not belonging to one person that is behind the house there. If it's in the public right-of-way, this is our treasure, our urban canopy. And here this guy was trenching down 10th Street, and he was busting up 3-inch roots.
Right.
And within a foot of the stock of the tree. And so we got in touch with some city officials, and hopefully we're going to be able to slow that process down or stop it or get it fixed so that that trenching could be done a little further away from the trees and not damage our beautiful urban canopy just for laying down some more pipe.
Right.
So important to keep our trees.
What Chico Tree Advocates is all about is offering free planting of free trees.
Mm-hmm.
Please get in touch with the Butte Environmental Council. You can go to their website and then click on programs, and you'll see Chico Tree Advocates is one of the programs. Get a hold of us, and we'll be happy to get out and get you a free tree and have it and plant it for you as well. The news is the last 8 years in Chico, as a community, we have cut down more trees than we have planted.
That's a lot.
Not a good trend.
Mm-hmm.
Not a good trend. We need to be planting more trees if we expect to keep our community livable.
Yeah. So, yeah. Next question would be about Career Builders.
Career Builders is one of the main programs of the Chico Peace and Justice Center. They're working on being able to get information out to students on alternatives to military service. Don't be afraid. we need to be out in front of this issue, alerting people to the misinformation that recruiters put out there.
Right.
And there are alternatives. We were told, you know, you had to call it counter-recruitment.
Mm-hmm.
But we called it that. They wouldn't let us on a local high school campus.
Really?
I went to the administration, and the vice principal folded his arms in front of me and said, "You're never coming on this campus."
Oh, my.
And we took that, went back, and we changed our name to Career Builders and came back. No, you can't come on campus. And then we hired we got the ACLU involved,
mm-hmm.
and we got some interesting letters back and forth, and we did get to go on campus. But still experienced a remarkable amount of lack of cooperation and lack of ability to get in touch with a lot of students.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a program that needs a lot of volunteers. If you're at all interested in the direction of our country's foreign policy, I think one of the neatest things you can do for a community is to educate students of military age of the dangers of military service.
Right.
My brother did his military service and came back so emotionally damaged that he and I couldn't talk for most of the rest of his life. And it was very, very tragic what can happen to people in military service. If you want to do it, if you have to do it, that's one thing, but you shouldn't go in with just the rosy picture that the recruiter paints for you.
Yes. There's more to war than you think, right?
It is damaging emotionally and physically. As Martin Luther King said, our people come back emotionally deranged.
Right.
It's really sad process that people go through.
Yeah, sounds like you've been through quite a lot with this program, for sure. Yeah. I guess another program I can ask you about is the Peace Panel Project.
That's a project that needs volunteers. It's an exhibit, sidewalk exhibit, that goes to different campuses. It talks about four books, The Ruses for War,
right,
by Quigley. This is an amazing book. You read it, and you will come to know from authorities like the Congressional Record that every war the United States has been in since, and including Korea, was started on a lie.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody should know about John Pilger. JohnPilger.com, and watch his free movie on the internet, War and Democracy.
Right.
Since the Korean War, the United States has tried to overthrow 50 countries.
Wow.
You can have peace in your own life. That's another book I like to talk about, is Nonviolent Communication by Rosenberg.
Mm-hmm.
And then one thing, What to Do About It, is A Better World Shopping Guide. That's something that you have control over, is the money that you spend. You can buy the things you need without patronizing the big multinational companies that are really trashing the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, one of my favorite books is Manufacturing Consent. You can watch a free movie on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
I watched it. Blew my mind, so I bought the book.
Okay.
And that blew my mind, so I bought 10 of them, and I sell it for half price and give it to friends, because this is why things are so screwed up. It's because the media that we're living with,
mm-hmm.
is mostly propaganda. They let out about 5-10% real news. So, oh yeah, hey, we got freedom of the press, against a backdrop of 90-95% propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
It's so pervasive, we don't even recognize it anymore. And so we're speaking violently, and we're patronizing these multinational corporations.
Mm-hmm.
What you can do in your own life right now is walk more, ride a bicycle, or switch to biofuels and electric. We should, according to the chairman of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe,
mm-hmm.
and the National Climate Assessment Study, we need to stop burning gasoline,
yeah,
and plant trees. Okay. So that's the stuff that the Peace Panel Project talks about. And it's an exhibit we can take to different campuses, and it'd be neat to get some volunteers doing that again. It's been kind of in hibernation for a couple of years now.
Wow.
And I guess it's been reborn in Chico Housing Action Team. I'm using those panels to promote Simplicity Village and the idea of small tribal living in Chico.
Yeah. Well, we're running low on time, but thank you for coming on and talking about what you've been doing lately.
So, thank you.
Yeah, you're very welcome. It's about time we read the underwriter announcement, I believe. So, let's see. Underwriter. Peace and Social Justice is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by North Rim Adventure Sports, specializing in bicycles, cycling apparel, and equipment. North Rim offers full-service bicycle sales, service and rentals and features, Trek Bicycles USA, and other top brands. North Rim Adventure Sports is located on 178 East 2nd Street in downtown Chico, on the web at northrimadventure.com. And by Burchard Construction, specializing in custom remodels, new home and commercial building, from foundation to finish work. Burchard Construction, where the homeowner's input matters to ensure a professional, reliable, and quality result. Custom construction with beauty and function. For bids and consultations, call Adam Burchard, B-I-R-C-H-A-R-D, at 864-5427, or visit Burchard, B-I-R-C-H-A-R-D, construction.com. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much, Jacob, and thank you so much, Charles. I really appreciate you being here and you taking the time to communicate with us all the important programs that you're working on, and I really admire all your volunteer work. It is always impressive to me what everything you do, Charles, so thank you.
Thank you.
Our second guest today is Rain, and they are a board member at the Chico Peace and Justice Center, as well as an activist on so many issues. And Rain, you're such an important community member. I just want to thank you so much for all you do.
Thanks.
I really appreciate it. So you're here to talk about Justice for Desmond, and specifically the campaign to write his name in to oppose Mike Ramsey for the DA election coming up June 5th, I do believe.
Yeah, that's true. First of all, I want to start out by acknowledging that we're having this conversation right now, and we all live here in Chico on occupied Machupta Maidu land. All of the issues that Charles was just talking about and all of the issues that we all work on in our community are all connected, including the murder of Desmond Phillips by Chico police. So sometimes there's big ways we can get involved. Sometimes there's little ways we can make a difference. And this is one small thing we're asking people to do for the Justice for Desmond Phillips campaign. I like to give people a little big picture kind of background, which is that Desmond Phillips was 25 years old when he was killed by Chico police last year, March 17th. And he was a 25-year-old Black and Miwok Native American young man. And statistically speaking, in the United States, Native Americans make up 1% of the population and 2% of people murdered by police. And Black people make up 13% of the total population of the United States and 24% of those murdered by police. And almost half of police murders, the person who was killed has some kind of disability. Most often it is mental illness. And Desmond was in all of those categories. So the cards were really stacked against him. And, you know, we had a tragedy right here in Chico.
It's very upsetting. You know, it's one of those things where you hear it on the news and you're really impacted by it, and when it happens in other communities, but then when it happens in your own, it really, really, really shakes you up. And it, you know, it should always impact everybody, obviously, but Desmond's story is such a tragic story. And, you know, I have mental health struggles. Obviously, I'm in a very privileged category, so I'm not as vulnerable to police violence as other people would be, but I heard his story and my heart just broke.
Yeah, and unfortunately, it's what's also really tragic about this whole situation is, as much as we have been fighting for justice for Desmond for over a year now, there are still so many people in our community who have no idea who he was or what happened. And there's a lot of misunderstandings and misconceptions because the local media, particularly the TV news,
right,
did not did not do a very thorough job of journalism or due diligence in investigation of what they were reporting. And they took statements from the district attorney and just, you know, used that as if it was truth without any question. There's a whole mountain of evidence that not only were the police negligent and criminal in their killing of Desmond Phillips, but that the district attorney was negligent and criminal in his justification of their use of force. And part of that is that the statements that the district attorney and the chief of police have made to the public in the time following Desmond's murder, they have contradicted themselves and changed their story multiple times. Those of us in the Justice for Desmond campaign have always maintained what the truth is. And David Phillips, Desmond's dad, was there and witnessed it himself. And he has always maintained the truth of his story of what he personally witnessed when he saw his son be murdered by the police in his own home. And so, you know, going into all the details would take a really long time, and we don't have that much time. But I want to be clear for people who don't know the basics of the story that Desmond Phillips was in mental health crisis when he was killed. He had post-traumatic stress disorder from being brutalized by police in Sacramento, which is where he lived right before he moved to Chico.
Right.
And he had been known to the police and behavioral health in Chico and Butte County previous to the incident where he was killed. They knew his history. And on the day that he was killed, they sent in rookies who did not have even the state mandated minimum training for critical incident intervention. And at no point was a mental health professional called to the scene. The police were on the scene for literally 9 minutes. Before Desmond was dead.
And that's ridiculous.
They made no attempt to de-escalate. They kicked in the door, tased him, and immediately shot, opened fire in his apartment, endangering not only his nephews and his father who were in the other room, but the neighbors. The bullets went through walls into neighbors' apartments. People have a right to know that not only in Butte County, people with mental illness are being killed by police at twice the national average.
Oh, good grief.
And also something that is never talked about is that people die in police custody in Chico, in Butte County, at twice the state average. And that's something we don't hear about because they're dying in custody, not necessarily being shot down in their home or in the street. Under the district attorney, Michael Ramsey, at this point in time in his 30 years of reign in Butte County, there have been 30 people that we know of who have been killed by police, and he has pretty much justified every single one of them. And 60% of those people killed by police had a history of mental illness that was known to the police when they were killed. And 70% of those people were killed during some form of a welfare check, a mental health call. The police knew they were coming to deal with someone who had mental health issues and was in crisis. And so we're tired of DA Ramsey. And unfortunately, we don't have any other options right now. In the primary election on Tuesday, on June 5th, he is running for re-election. There is no one running against him. So rather than give him your vote or not vote at all, what we're asking people to do is to check the box that says you want to write someone in and write in Desmond Phillips' name for district attorney, because we don't have any other option, but at the very least, we cannot give our vote to Michael Ramsey.
That's such a good idea, and it's so important to make some sort of statement. And I know that you're, you know, going as far as you can, as far as the state level goes, to try and rectify, or, well, not rectify because you can't, but address these issues as much as you can, but I think it's really important that, you know, we make a local statement, and I certainly will be taking that action myself. So I really appreciate you being here, Rain. I really appreciate you sharing the story of Desmond Phillips. It needs a story that needs to be told. It's something that people need to be aware of, and I'm so glad that people are speaking up for him. And, you know, there's nothing, you know, it's called justice for Desmond, but you really can't get justice for such a brutal event. And, you know,
we can never bring Desmond back, but we have a lot of goals for the campaign, and we're not going to stop until we see real change in this community. And we do have a state level, the state attorney general currently has an independent investigation into the case, and there are folks on the local level working on other aspects of improving, for example, mental health care access, and holding the police accountable. And, you know, I just want to say real quick that, you know, we talk a lot about how Desmond died, and that he wasn't a threat to anyone when he was murdered, and it was totally senseless. But also, I want to make sure that we always talk about who Desmond was when he was alive, that he was a sweet person who was loved by his family and his church. He sang in his church choir. And the project of his heart, which, like I started, all these issues are connected. The project of his heart when he first moved to Chico was that him and his dad every Sunday after church would go downtown and feed homeless folks on the street out of their own pockets, just because they wanted to, you know, share that humanity and care for their fellow human being. And that was who Desmond was. So we do a lot of things. This is just one thing. We really want people to write in Desmond Phillips for district attorney. But I really encourage people to follow our Facebook page, Justice for Desmond Phillips, to get more information and more updates about what we're doing in the campaign. And we'll also be at the city council meeting Tuesday evening to talk about these issues. And I know other folks are going to be there to be talking about homelessness issues, and they're all connected.
Yeah, I know there's a strong, huge connection between mental health and race disparities and police action and homelessness as well. And it's just, it's a tragic cycle. And I, you know, obviously, Rain, you're very passionate. You have to be passionate. Just having this conversation, I'm practically tearing up. So it's an important issue. I encourage everybody out there to take action and to check out Justice for Desmond on Facebook. Thank you, Rain, so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. And if you don't do Facebook, you can also email us at justicefordesmond@gmail.com. That's justice, the number 4, desmond@gmail.com. And if you go on our Facebook, we have an event page for the write-in for district attorney. And please mark that you're going to on there that and or comment that you're going to be writing him in, or you did maybe on your mail-in ballot. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Rain. All right, we've got to wrap up here, so literally out of time, as always. So I just want to tell you that you can contact me by email at radio@chicopeace.org. You can find the center online and sign up for the Peaceful Action newsletter at chicopeace.org, and you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Chico Peace. We're at 526 Broadway, Chico, California. And our hours are new hours now, Monday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Our phone number, 530-893-9078. And I believe we have music to go out on, do we not?
This is the turntable.
Okay.
Yeah. Turntable fader.
All right. Let's get out of here. Thank you so much for listening, and I appreciate everyone being here for the CPJ C30. We'll talk to you next week, and in the meantime, stay tuned for Chris Nelson as we continue on with the Peace and Social Justice Show.
Freedom cannot rest until it comes. We who believe in freedom cannot rest. We who believe in freedom cannot rest until it comes. until the killing of black men, black mothers' sons, is as important as the killing of white men, white mothers' sons. We who believe in we believe in freedom,
believe in freedom,
freedom can that which touches me most is that I had a chance to work with people, passing on to others that which was passed on to me. We who believe in freedom and
freedom. Yes, sing it with us. Come on.
We who believe in freedom and freedom comes. To me, young people come first.
They come first.
They have the courage where we fail. And if I can but shed some light as they carry us through the gate. We who believe in freedom and God, freedom and God, rest. We who believe in freedom and God, freedom till it comes. The old secret of my going on, is when the reins are in the hands of the young who dare to run against the storm. We who believe in freedom cannot rest. We who not needing to clutch for power, not needing the light just to shine on me. I need to be one in the number as we stand against tyranny. Struggling myself don't mean a whole lot. I've come to realize that teaching others to stand and fight is the only way I struggle survive. Oh, we who believe in
freedom.
Sweet Honey in the Rock, and this is FM 90.1, KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. My name is Chris. I really want to thank Nicholas and his compatriot for doing the show before this one with Charles Withune and Rain Cher. We have a great guest in the studio. I've been unable to get my other guest up on the line, But we will keep going, and I want to make a couple of announcements first. And the first one, of course, is thank our underwriters, those who help us stay on the air here. The Peace and Justice program is made possible by generous contributions from all of you KZFR supporters and by the famous Blue Peace House in Chico. If you're looking for accommodations for friends or family, the famous Blue Peace House is a quiet, peaceful home in the heart of Chico that sleeps up to six. With a kitchen stocked with basic supplies, a redwood deck, gas grill, and herb and veggie gardens. More information at the famous Blue Peace House on Facebook. Airbnb Chico, or by calling Steve 588-3549. And by Andrew Sprague Construction, certified impervious concrete for our green future and serving the North State since 1983. Andrew Sprague Construction specializes in structural concrete for commercial and residential construction, as well as hardscape, including stained or stamped concrete. Contact Andrew Sprague Construction by calling 877-7124. I wanted to just give you one announcement before we start, because I promised I would, because there's so much important stuff coming on, and just this is something that's near and dear. Okay, so this is the third year of a four-year prayer journey from the mouth of the Sacramento River to the upper watershed of the McLeod River to call the salmon home. The Winneman Wintu tribe has been collecting eggs from salmon in New Zealand, and they are trying to get the salmon back into the river because these are the historical salmon that live there in the watershed. There is a fundraiser happening with Chief Kaleen Sisk and the tribe to celebrate this milestone in the journey home. And you can get an update about this project and learn more about it. And there'll be lots of good food and music and spoken word. It is 695 East 18th Street. It's called Run for Salmon. So that is on June 2nd. And so hope you can make it to that. Of course, I don't see the time on here, but it is on Facebook, Run for Salmon, with the number 4 in the middle. So in the studio with me, I have an important guest, and you were able to hear one Surge member from Butte County Surge speaking with us in the first part of the show. And now I have with me someone who equally has a voice that needs to be heard, because she represents rural Surge. And this is Julie Garza Withers, community organizer and member of the leadership team for the national organization Showing Up for Racial Justice. Surge, as it's called, believes in collective liberation and that none of us can be free until we end white supremacy. Surge's role as part of a multiracial movement is to undermine white support for white supremacy and help build a racially just society. That work cannot be done in isolation from or disconnected from the powerful leadership of communities of color. So, Julie, that is a wonderful introduction, except I think we need to parse it out a little bit. First, with maybe a definition of terms. What is white supremacy?
White supremacy is the system of power. It's really about power that, in the United States specifically, was founded on genocide of Native Americans and the slavery system. And the class system is also part of white supremacy, because we created the class system to create a class of people that were given power and worth based on skin color, where poor whites were sort of, you know, given a degree more power than people of color, which is something we still see active in institutions and interpersonally today. So that's, you know, there's dictionary definitions of white supremacy, but really it's a system of power. You know, that's what whiteness is. It's about power. You know, that's why when white folks feel like, hey, you know, I'm a white person, I grew up poor, working class, or I didn't have everything handed to me, I've had to work for everything I've got. You know, what we have to help folks understand is that skin privilege, having lights, I'm mixed race, I have light colored skin, that gives us a degree of power in society, a way to walk through the world that people of color, regardless of their class background, have.
So that is white privilege. Mm-hmm. But white supremacy is something that for me is a little more frightening because I see the rise of this thing in the Trump administration and with the rise of this outward the racism now. It just seems like it's really out.
Yeah, and I think, well, it's important to really make it clear that when we're talking about white supremacy as a system of power, we aren't talking about white supremacists per se, like folks that might be in the KKK or belong to Patriot Pair or some of those other organizations or even our own local state of Jefferson groups, which are very much, you know, about white supremacy. Mm-hmm. So, but white supremacist is a different sort of, it's a, you know, we can play with words, it's a different designation. I think that's why I prefer fascist is a term, because then we can separate white supremacy as a system of power, but then fascism is being about misogyny and racism and sexism and all, you know.
And I think of that as corporate control too, that revolving door of the capitalism that, and so we've already gotten off kind of a...
Well, I think it's important to say, though, that capitalism is racialized. You know, if you
okay. If
you want to follow the work, this Robin D.G. Kelly is, Dr. Kelly is a fantastic person to follow. He's a communication studies professor, but he does a lot of work on racialized capitalism. You can YouTube him and find out. And, you know, he doesn't separate the two. He doesn't separate, in the United States, the race system from kids. It's, capitalism is racialized in the United States. But to get back to what you were saying, we haven't been getting off topic. What you started with was Serge's theory of change. You know, we have a theory of change.
Go ahead.
About how we're going to make things be different, and that is by following people of color leadership. That's by undermining white folks' support for white supremacy, for instance, like policing. You know, white folks tend to really support police sort of flat out without question. I think folks are a little... much less so now that we have the technology where we can see what people of color have been experiencing pretty much since the dawn of time. So I think that that's one of the more important areas that Surge is currently working on through our group Surge Faith, is to undermine white support for white supremacy by focusing on policing, you know, as being, because policing is one of the primary ways that white supremacy is expressed in the United States.
Yes, in a very terrifying way that we've seen over the last few years. I mean, since we've gotten all these video footages of these crimes against poor people of color who have been shot, young males. And that's what we talked about in the first half hour, too, is about the case of Desmond Phillips.
Right.
And I think one of the points that they were making there is to actually politicize this more by the write-in campaign that's happening for Desmond
Absolutely.
Phillips here in Butte County, where we have a district attorney who's running without opposition, and this is one way
again
to oppose that system.
Well, right, because that's the thing is that we're, you know, Chico's a metropolitan area; it has a large population, but the rest of Butte County is incredibly rural, and the fact that Ramsey runs unopposed year after, you know, time mm-hmm. after time again, and I think that that's that sort of, you know, what Serge Butte County is trying to do is sort of challenge with that campaign is to challenge sort of the good old boy network,
right,
in that sense, which is important. We must challenge it,
right? And rural Serge now is heading even further. You're covering, trying to cover the other counties that are beyond the urban areas.
Well, I feel like Butte County, with the college, you know, having a community college, having a four-year college, it has the Chico Peace and Justice Center. I mean, it has a strong activist community. But if you go up, you know, I lived in Reading for several years, and even though it's a large city, you know, it feels very rural the minute you get out of city limits. And where I'm at in Forest Ranch or Quincy or, you know, south of us in Yuba County, you know, there's a power is very different, and there's just not the social justice work, which is why I was really excited when I connected with NorCal Resist, because I would say that they're more likely, covering more area than we are. But by connecting with them, it gave us sort of a lifeline to the work that really needs to happen in rural areas. And in rural areas, because of the population in our area of Northern California, there's a lot of work around immigration that we need to be doing. You know, it's there's so many different issues around race in our area. you know, not to mention the fact that, you know, we have to look at the history of Northern California and race and Western expansion and, you know.
Yeah, I know.
It's a whole other story.
It's a huge issue, and I'm sorry that we don't have other guests on the line. In fact, I think I'm going to try to get him on.
That'd be good.
Because
he can talk about immigration, yeah.
He's NorCal Resist, and if we could get him, that would be great. So I'm going to go to a song by Toshi Reagan from her album Justice. It's a title cut, and then we'll be right back with you. I have in the studio with me Julie Garza Withers. Hang on just a sec here. You're listening to the Peace and Justice program, and I I believe I have on the line with me Pablo Reyes Morales. He is a member of NorCal Resist. He's an immigrant from Mexico. He was born in Morelia in Michoacan. He came to the United States when he was 13. He graduated high school and worked mowing lawns, cleaning offices, houses, hotels, and on the fruit fields, picking peaches, nectarines, and etc. He became an activist for immigration during the DREAM Act 2010 era. He then became an organizer and currently serves as a senior organizer for California's largest labor union, the SEIU Local 2015. And I won't read the description, Pablo, about NorCal Resist, but can you tell us about your work for NorCal Resist?
Yeah.
Thank you for being on.
So, no, thank you for having me. NorCal Resist started with just a group of folks that right after Trump's victory for his presidency, it's kind of like a bucket of cold water in a lot of us. It was just a meeting, really. The next day, everybody got together. We said we have to do something. As reactionary of an act as that would seem, the vision of NorCal Resist certainly isn't. I think a lot of the folks that are involved in NorCal Resist have an intent and a vision of deep organizing in our communities, develop networks that are self-sustaining, but also that form a movement, not a moment, right? Because I think that through a lot of the conversations, that intentional conversations of why we are in the place that we are politically and socially, and how much of the oppression that our communities are receiving, it's really on us. We have discovered that we have isolated or let the powers that be isolate ourselves behind a computer screen or behind closed doors. So I think that the intent of forming NorCal Resist started with a war cry of, we cannot take it anymore. We have to not only talk to each other, but really strengthen relationships between strangers to the point that we become family. Hence, one of the priorities of NorCal Resist currently is to develop a network of legal observers across Northern California that can act as the backbone tools for the oppression of law enforcement through ICE and through police brutality, which I think is a great feat to take, but I think it's necessary. So that's a little bit of how NorCal Resist came to be.
Yeah, and you use the term revolutionary survivalism, which I think is really apt at this point, seeing as how things have been coming down. You mentioned some of the trainings, or you mentioned some of the watch things that you're doing. It's called Migro Watch trainings. Tell us about that a little bit.
Yeah, so for the Migro Watch trainings, it came from really from a necessity of our communities, right? I was a dreamer for a long time, and talking to immigrants as a whole, and hearing the threats from the administration about targeting California because of, I guess, its quote-unquote rebel status. We wanted to quickly mobilize and trained volunteers throughout the Northern California on how to be legal observers. So through the Migra Watch trainings, they get some of the tools on how to report ICE activity, but also some know your rights portions on how to deal with ICE and some of the oppression of the law enforcement and how it's currently working. I think that the other term that you mentioned was, or that I mentioned was revolutionary survivalism. That one is a very interesting result of conversations through then really focusing on the necessities of our communities and how we can bring services to the communities that need it, that cannot rely on government's footing, but also injustice, right? Because we're looking at the homeless folk situation just on the rise. We're looking at brutality from government agencies on the rise.
Right.
So when we say survivalism, we really mean it in a way that we are securing our defensive mode but planning our offensive, right? I don't know if that makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense because, yes, our homeless people in our community are very much under attack. And it's, you know, it's important that we make these alliances, and I appreciate it. In the way that I have met you, not really met you, but saw you, was first at a when a man was detained, Isaias Cisneros, and he was detained at the Yuba County Jail, and I didn't even know that these ICE detentions were happening because I thought we were still sanctuary state. So I know you don't have a lot of time with us, but can you update us about who is being detained? Where are they being detained, and what can we do to stop it? I know you're working on something with trying to prevent a sheriff's contract, an ICE contract in Sacramento. Go ahead.
Yes. I think that the first sort of the first line that I try to emphasize on when immigrants cases come about and talking to allies is that in these movements, there are different struggles. We must remember who is struggling first. In the case of Isaias, we really wanted Isaias and his family and immigrants that were at risk of the same fate to take leadership and to really give the input on how we can best support that leadership. I think that as allies, that would be the first thing that I would address, that when we say, how can we help, is to listen to those in struggle for their lead. What we're doing as NORCO Resist also is, as you mentioned, preventing the ICE renewal contract with the sheriff through the Board of Supervisors in Sacramento. I think that we are calling for a restructural, radical, I will dare calling it a restructural radical change to how the state of California and the local agencies interact with the federal government and federal mandate. Because our communities are very well spoken in the language of the oppressed, which will translate to protests, which will translate to civil disobedience, but before we get to that, we always try to highlight the issue. Right now, there's about 3-4 facilities, detention centers in our area where we don't only call for them to be shut down completely, but we want the people in those facilities to be released back to the community on legal status. And again, I think that we, as NORCO Resist, we don't want to get stuck in, you know, is that the end, right? Legal status. You know, I often go back to the phrase that Dr. King says about what good is it to sit in the counter if we cannot afford the burger or read the menu. So it's not enough for us to say we're going to close detention centers, we're going to do protests, and we're going to do all of this. But what it is enough is to change the narrative of white supremacy, to change the narrative of oppression, and not only the narrative but the structural systematic processes that are in tune for the oppressed to take leadership in all issues.
Pablo Reyes Morales, you speak so eloquently. I really appreciate you, and I'm so sorry we couldn't get you sooner. I was wondering if you could say how people can get involved with NorCal Resist, how they can get MIGRA trainings in their communities, or other ways that they can help.
Yeah, I mean, the very first way to get involved with NorCal Resist would be to email us at norcalresist@gmail.com. Also, if they look for us on Facebook, send us a direct message. That will be the fastest way, where there's always someone, looking at our messages. If anybody's interested in having a training on some of our tactics around revolutionary survivalism or the MIGRA Watch training, if you just let us know through the email or through Facebook, what we ask is a commitment of anybody that asks, of having friends, family, and those who they think will be involved. Again, because to be present at the training, again, because our theory of power is that the power lies with the people and with the deep relationships that they already have. So if anybody wants a training, let us know. We'll be there. Just help us gather the people.
Okay. And one last thing. I was wondering if you could tell us about bond outs. Is there anybody right now who needs help with bonding out, and what is that? Last thing.
We are constantly looking, doing GoFundMe campaigns, or I know there's other platforms where we are recruiting for some funds for folks, not only for bond out, but also there are folks that have already been out, and they have, I mean, you know, they are in the oppressive world outside of the inside oppressive world, and they also need funds to sustain themselves while they get their feet on the ground. So the way that we primarily send those is through our email list and through our Facebook pages. So I really would encourage folks to visit us on our Facebook page, where most of our communication is done. Because yeah, I think there are three cases right now that we're really pushing through to fundraise.
Thank you, Pablo Reyes Morales, for being with us on the Peace and Justice program today. I'm sorry our time was so short. I really appreciate you very much. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Bye-bye. All right. So I'm in the studio with Julie Garza Withers. Do you have any reflections about what Pablo was talking about?
Oh, it was just amazing to listen to Pablo. This is why I love NorCal Resist so much. The couple things that I wrote notes, just because I couldn't help it when he was talking, the idea of revolutionary survivalism, of course, as a rural person, that touches my rural and rebel heart, because I feel like what he's talking about is really revolutionary relationships in many ways. You know, he's saying that, you know, we cannot survive without each other. You know, it's the Assata Shakur quote, you know, we're here to love and support one another. And that's what I think is such an essential message, because, you know, it gets lost in the movement, you know, and that was the other thing he said. It's a movement, not a moment. And I think, you know, that's what drew me to Surge, what drew me to NorCal Resist and working with them as well, is that, you know, this isn't about protest. I mean, it's about protest, but it's really about the long haul change that Trump is a symptom, really. It's not a surprise to a lot of us, and it's a symptom, and now we've got to start getting down and dirty and deal with it and create a movement of real change.
Yeah, and I'm really appreciative too that he has such a comprehensive view of things. You know, it is very refreshing to feel like you're really part of something, and you don't have to be, you know, well spoken, you don't have to be anything in particular, but if you care about your brothers and sisters who are on the streets, your brothers and sisters who are at risk of deportation, you know, people of color who maybe are not even comfortable going into a rural restaurant because they just feel like they would, you know, be discriminated against in some way because it's happened a million times before.
Exactly.
You know, when you can feel part of all those folks and all their different scenarios, it just feels like that's where you want to be standing.
Right. I mean, that's the thing. That's when I first discovered Surge. I discovered Surge in right around December of 2015. A friend of mine, Felicia Gustin, she's part of Surge Oakland Bay Area, and she's a leader with them and also part of an organization called Speak Out. And she had put a call out there, you know, about Surge. And I thought, wow, it's basically about showing up for other people. It's about not centering ourselves, those of us who have privilege, whether it's white privilege, class privilege, male privilege, you know, ableist privilege. You know, it's that we must show up. I think that's part of the attraction to the Poor People's Campaign as well. It's that this is a moral movement.
Yeah.
That we need to start being grounded in not a sort of hokey love for one another, but a deep love for another, one another, that's about our community and about our survival.
And can you talk more about the Poor People's Campaign?
Yeah. Surge has endorsed it nationally, but the Poor People's Campaign is going on in state capitals across the country right now. 40 days of action that take place on Mondays in various state capitals. In ours, NorCal Resist, and I can't remember the other groups, but are part of leading that charge in Sacramento. And it's just grounded in the issues around the military economy, the environment, economic inequality, racism, gender inequality. Those are sort of the pillars. But it's a sort of a, this is what Dr. King was working on when he was assassinated. You know, and I think that it's been renewed because we really see the value in the Poor People's Campaign, that economic inequality is used. I mean, money, class is used to keep black and brown people down in this country consistently, institutionally, and that until we see the mutual interest for poor and working class people who are white, people who are poor and black and brown, that we start building a community that supports that mission. I mean, that includes also disabled people. Folks don't really think about disabled people when we think about the movement, but disabled people are routinely more poor. They live in more rural areas because it's too expensive to live in a city or suburb. You know, so I think it's just about really putting the people who are the most marginalized in the forefront.
Yeah, and folks should remember we're only able for a while, and then we become disabled with age and disability.
That's right.
So we're all on a continuum, and it's really important to have one another, to look out for each other. I was in Sacramento on Tuesday as part of the Militarism, War Economy, Veterans, Education, and Our National Priorities Poor People's Campaign, and 20 people were arrested. And I'm very, very moved by what they did, and I hope that you'll be able to check out some of that footage on Poor People's Campaign Facebook page, it's Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival, Poor People's Campaign, all one word, .org. It's also on Facebook. But next week, this coming week, it will be on ecological devastation and health, clean air, clean water, and health care for all. Then June 11th, everybody's got a right to live, jobs, income, the right to organize, and housing. And week 6, a new and unsettling force, a fusion movement rising up, which is what Julie's been talking about, what Pablo also was talking about. And this is an incredible movement, and it's really worth that very long drive to Sacramento to participate in. Is there anything else you want to talk about with the Poor People's Campaign? Because I feel like this is just so generational.
Well, I feel like it's just something really to plug into. You know, I think that's when I talk to people most often, you know, that's what do I do? Where do I get involved? You know,
yeah.
That's why I feel like what Pablo was talking about with the ICE Migra trainings. You can become a legal observer. You can be part of the Poor People's Campaign and get the tools to sort of come back to your own community, which is part of this, and start talking about these issues.
And you've done some of these trainings yourselves. You're a trainer. Mm-hmm. And so was it here in Chico?
We have. I'm not the one who actually, Autumn, who's also part of NorCal Resist, usually does our trainings. And we actually are looking for another one in Chico in June. We're trying to get that scheduled. I do Know Your Rights trainings for high school students in the Bay Area. I've done a couple of them now. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like, particularly because these are economically privileged white kids in private schools, that they have an important role in society mm-hmm. to sort of use their privilege.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about, I want to definitely firm up a training here, but in the future, but for June, so people will be looking for that. But in terms of knowing your rights, if you're a person of white privilege and you're trying to be of assistance to somebody else who you come upon who's in a situation and they're vulnerable and you're there, you have your cell phone or you're just your presence, what should we be doing?
Well, I want to say first, it really depends on the context of the situation, because you also don't want to be a white savior and just barge in on somebody's who may not feel like they want your help or protection.
Good point.
But I feel like, so for instance, I can just give you an example of a situation that was a real one I went through, where there's a homeless man downtown and two of the downtown quote unquote ambassadors were talking to him, and I went up to the man and I said, "Are you okay?" And I said, "Do you want me to say anything to these guys?" And he was like, "Are they bugging you?" And he wasn't very verbal, and the two men I was talking to said they thought he was drunk, and they also thought he was Native American, which really raised my hackles instantly. So what I did is, as an observer, was I went across the street and I just started filming the interaction, because I felt at that point, I don't know, I just had the sense that something could potentially go wrong. And one of the things about legal observing that's really important is, one of the most important roles for legal observers, whether they're in a formal protest situation or just in an everyday situation like that, is they act often as a deterrent for police. When police feel they're being watched, they tend to behave better. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the reasons. But it really is, that's why I say it's so important to get the training, because it really is context dependent. And also, too, the safety of the person doing the legal observing is also an important part of that. And that's why it's so important.
Well, I'm looking forward to taking that, because I've come on those situations before, and oftentimes been afraid for my own safety with the police, but I've done it anyway. And
good.
And I had an app on my phone. It looks like I deleted it, but there's an ACLU app mm-hmm. where you send your information directly to the ACLU,
yes.
and you can find that on your Google Play.
Mm-hmm. I have it on my phone.
You know, on your phone, yeah. So there's that. And so what are the things in terms of rural people should we really be paying attention to? Because KZFR isn't just urban. We have listeners all the way to Sacramento, throughout this, you know, this vast valley, many, many different people, and in the foothills. And their experiences are much different than they are
yes.
here in town.
I've lived, I was born in Southern California. I lived in a rural community as a kid. Pretty much, I lived in a lot of rural communities of Northern California, Arcata, where I live now in Forest Ranch. And it is different. It's a different world. It's slower paced. It's not a place where people think racism is a problem, and it's because it's predominantly white. Because in this part of California, the communities here were, a lot of the communities were former sundown towns, and these were communities that were sort of planned to be white. So in many ways. So a lot of the problems that we have in rural areas that have to do with race or people who are queer have to do with that sort of history mm-hmm. and the fact that being different is a problem for people. You know, it's not necessarily a safe place to be, but rural areas too have their own, you know, economically, the lack of jobs, and opportunity, buying a home, even in California in rural areas, is becoming increasingly out of reach for a lot of folks. Healthcare in rural areas is a significant problem, particularly women's reproductive care. That's a very
right.
big issue
yes.
in rural areas.
Mm-hmm.
And aging, you know, who takes care of the elderly in rural areas? So there's so many different things that come together. And like I said earlier, people who are disabled tend to live in rural areas, even though there aren't a lot of services. It's when you're on a very limited fixed income, it's a place where you might actually be able to find a decent apartment or a little house to rent.
Yeah, and I think about when people become homeless in those communities, you know, it's
I can't even imagine it could be there's so much services.
So much worse.
Yeah, there's no services. And in many ways, I mean, when we talk, one of the things we talk a lot about in Surge is this idea of anti-blackness. And in rural areas that are predominantly white, homeless people become sort of a target in that same sort of anti-black way where these communities exclude difference. They exclude people who are too needy. You know, it's that's that piece about white supremacy that we were talking about. It's just a system in place to of power and keeping people out that they don't want.
Right, and you know that same thing. I have to go back to Chico again because that same thing has come up. There's I don't know what you call them, a hate group. I guess it's called Chico First, and they want to shut down this town. Basically, they want to reinstitute the sit lie ordinance. They want to make it so people can't use shopping carts. They want to criminalize almost every aspect of life, and they call it reducing community blight. Rather than seeing people as people, they have this big list of prohibitions and loitering and property problems. I mean, they're criminalizing every single aspect.
And I'm going to guess that this group is probably also predominantly white, predominantly middle and owning class folks. I mean, that's something we must point out, that when you look, a couple years ago I interviewed James Lowen, who wrote a lot of seminal works, but one of his best books is Lies My Teacher Told Me. But he also writes about sundown towns, and he's written about California. One of the things I wanted to ask him, because I was doing some research, was if the way we treat homeless folks in California, where we're supposedly a little more racially aware, which isn't necessarily true, but if the way we treat homeless folks with the sit-and-lie ordinance and things like that, is that related to the fact that of our sundown town exclusionary practices, our history? And he said, absolutely. Absolutely. That's rooted in the racism that burned down Chinese Chinatowns across rural Northern California.
And in Chico.
That have committed hate crimes against black and brown people in this area. This is all connected. That's why it's so important, the homeless issue right now, because it's where all these things come together.
Mm-hmm. How do we reclaim people who are in this state of... How do we humanize the people that are going further and further to this white supremacy, my rights, you know, Jesus.
That resentment.
Yeah, Jesus is mine, and I created him in my own image and likeness. I mean, whatever that thing is of the other, how do we bring people into their common place of what Dr. King and Dr. Barber and, I mean, Reverend Barber and everybody's trying to get at, where to like put down the gun and see each other.
You know what makes me think when you were talking, I immediately thought of Ann and Carl Braden, but particularly Ann Braden were Louisville anti-racist activists. And Ann, I went to the Carl Braden, Ann and Carl Braden house when I was in Louisville a few months ago. And Ann was, you know, a really, you know, privileged white woman who just spent her life doing this work. And I just want to read a quote from her because I think it relates to what you're saying. And here it is. The battle is and always has been a battle for the hearts and minds of white people in this country. The fight against racism is our issue. It's not something that we're called on to help people of color with. We need to become involved with it as if our lives depended on it, because really, in truth, they do. And I think what she's talking about there, you know, so how do you win people over? Very patiently, because, you know, she one of the things I learned when I was in Louisville was that she and her husband were, you know, considered the most hated couple in Louisville for a time because of the way they stood by and stood for and followed people of color, particularly black people in Louisville. And so I think as a person this is something I've learned about Southern organizing, is you've got to be committed to it for the long haul. You know, folks think that they can get in an argument on Facebook with someone and change their mind with just a few pithy comments. You know, it's just really not going to work, and especially in an online environment. It's when we have a sit-down conversation, a difficult sometimes conversation. You know, white people keep things, particularly middle-class white people, keep things so nice and safe. So it's getting uncomfortable. It's having, you know, it's when you go home and you know, Uncle Joe is going to make some weird racist joke, and being able to say, you know, Uncle Joe, that's really not funny.
Okay. So I'm going to ask you one last thing because we're running out of time. Billy Graham's son will be in Chico.
Franklin
will be in Chico this weekend. And, you know, what I said about religion, it brought up my whole sense of the fact that people have such different ideas, and that the whole Christianity is just, as far as I can tell, gone pretty bonkers with...
Well, evangelicals, I think it's important, because I have friends that are lefty Christians that are like, wait a minute here. But
I know.
At the same time, I know what you're saying. It's
Okay, so I have a problem with Mr. Graham, and I don't know if I'm willing to face that discomfort to go out and interact with his followers.
You must.
A lot of people are going.
I'm going.
You're going. So tell us about that.
I'm going because, you know, I mean, this is a person who meets privately with our Vice President Mike Pence, and who is advising the President of the United States. You know, these are people who consider themselves currently in exile. These are the people with the most power in this country. They have most of the wealth. They're white. A lot of them are men. But they're convinced that they're oppressed, as they're oppressing, you know. And it's really about power. They're frustrated about the loss, the sense that they may not own the world anymore, you know. And I think that we have to go out and get uncomfortable and face those people, because we can't expect black and brown people to go face them and put themselves in danger. That's our job. I'm not going to expect one of my trans friends to go out and face some of those folks that might harm them physically. That's my job.
Okay. All right. I really, really appreciate you've put a spine back into my back. So thank you, Julie Garza Withers, for everything that you're doing with Rural Surge and of Northern California. And I hope to meet you out there on the line there. And I wanted to make a few announcements. If you just want to hang on till the end of the show, that'd be great. So you've been listening to the Peace and Justice program. My name is Chris. We're on every Friday from 11:30 to 1, and with rotating hosts. I want to make some announcements. Again, to remind you that Run for Salmon is coming up, and there is a fundraiser at 695 East 18th Street, June 2nd, and and to try to come out for that. It's in the evening, and you'll have to check Run for Salmon on Facebook for the actual time, which I didn't write myself a note about. Then the thing that we were just talking about, Women on Reproductive Defense, is one of the groups that will be protesting Franklin Graham's Decision America tour this Sunday. This is a right-wing attempt to get out the vote, so it's very important. It's about intolerance, anti-choice, pro-conversion therapy for LGBTQ people. So come on out if you would like to. And again, you're going to have to look that up. All I have written down here is it's this Sunday, and that from 5 to 6:30. Hang on. Julie, go ahead.
There's a Facebook event page. I believe, I don't know where I've seen it, but I will put it on the Rural Surge of NorCal page.
Okay.
But there is a Facebook event out there.
All right, thank you. And there's also sign making at the Chico Peace and Justice Center. Bring your favorite Bible verses about love and tolerance. And also on that night, there is Doing It Justice is going to be at the El Rey Theater at 4 p.m., and this is for Aqua Alliance, the people that are trying to save our water in Northern California. So do come out for that beforehand. And then on the 5th, the City Council meeting promises to be extremely important. The City Council, the 4 conservative majority, will be prioritizing, they will be agendizing some of these onerous things that we were talking about earlier about homeless people, people without homes. And also we're hoping to get Move the Junkyard on the agenda. There's a lot going on. So I hope that you'll come out for that. Also, June 6th is the day that we get out to vote. And it's very, very important this time that you do get your stay-at-home ballot. If you've already completed that and you want to have it counted before the election, you have to drive it to Oroville now, or you can hand it in on the day of the election at any polling place, or if you can help out to get other people to the polls on the 6th, it's extremely important. And again, some people are voting in Desmond Phillips as a candidate for Butte County District Attorney. He has passed, of course, so this is just an advisory measure. And did I actually get through my announcements? I guess I'm so wound up. I did. So I've got Julie still in the studio. And what things do you want to announce, Julie?
What things do I want to announce? Well, I want folks to go to the next Poor People's Campaign in Sacramento. Mm-hmm. Usually it starts around 2. You can, on Facebook, do a search for California Poor People's Campaign. That's a good one. We have, like I said, we're going to be doing a training in June, which I'll let Chris know about, for ICE MIGRA observing. Other announcements, stay awake. You know, don't be afraid of bad news. That's something I hear a lot. You know, I think that black and brown folks have to live in this country. Poor folks have to live in this country. And I think that one of the things that we have to do as people with privilege is to not turn away. So that's one of my announcements. Don't turn away from the bad stuff. Don't be like me and go, oh, I don't want to hear Trump on the radio. I'm going to turn it off. Don't turn it off.
Or don't miss out on Democracy Now just because it might bum you out part of the time. I've heard that before from people. Oh, that's such a bummer. It's like
it's a privilege to be bummed.
It is a privilege to have good news reporting and to have Amy Goodman. And also, that's another announcement I want to make, is that we're going to have Medea Benjamin here in Chico in the KZFR studio on the 13th, was Wednesday night, at 7 p.m. here, and there's limited seatings, and there are no tickets, so it's going to be first come, first served. Sue Hildebrand, who is the host of The Real Issue, will interview Medea during her show at 6 p.m., so you'll hear her, and we're hoping to get Medea on live, so if you can't afford to be in the studio, because there is an admission price, you can hear her at home. There's going to be a really dynamic question and answer series, and she has written a new book about Iran. She, of course, is the co-founder of Code Pink and founder of Global Exchange and one of the best-known peace activists in the country. So this has been the Peace and Justice Program. I'm going to go ahead and thank our underwriters at this point. We want to thank, first of all, local, seasonal, and organic delights at Farm Star Pizza, where the farmer is the star. Farm Star features artisan pizzas, salad, appetizers, and desserts with vegan and gluten-free offerings, craft beer, and eclectic wines. Farm Star Pizza is open Monday through Friday for lunch, noon on Saturday and Sunday, and for dinner 7 nights a week, with live music on Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday at 2359 The Esplanade. Visit farmstarpizza.com or like them on Facebook. And by Live Life Juice Company, providing locally fresh cold-pressed juices and elixirs. Find the Live Life Juice Company at Wednesday and Saturday Chico Farmers Markets and at 220 Broadway. Weekdays from 9 to 7, Saturday from 10 to 5, and Sundays from 10 to 4. More information, visit Live Life Juice Company, livelifejuiceco.com on Facebook, or you can call them at 566-3346. Live Life Juice Company, pure fresh juice and drink to your health. I want you to stay tuned for Playing Dead, Please. Rick is in the house, and he will be doing the show today. And it's been my honor to be with you today. And please stay well and stay strong.
The This is the KZFR Events Calendar. I'm Ricky Anderson. Thanks for listening to KZFR. Saturday, June 2nd, KZFR is proud to support the Arroyo Sessions Art and Fashion Show at Magnolia Gift and Gardens. It starts at 5 in the afternoon. It's going to be a fun evening of fashions and music. Get tickets at the door or online at eventbrite.com. Tim Flannery and the Lunatic Fringe are coming back to Chico, playing at the Women's Club on Friday, June 8th. Then the Grateful Dead fans will love it. It's Melvin Seals and the JGB, the Jerry Garcia Band, at the Chico Women's Club on Father's Day, June 17th. Coming to Paradise Performing Arts Center on Tuesday, July 10th, it's Paul Thorne and James McMurtry. Tickets at the usual outlets, including Blaze and Jay's In Paradise. Zach Gill from ALO is breaking out of the band and playing a gig on his own. An evening with Zach Gill at the Chico Women's Club, Friday, August 17th. Tickets on sale very soon. Ray Wiley Hubbard is coming back to Chico and playing at the Chico Women's Club on Friday, September 21st. This is the station that believes in peace through music, 90.1 KZFR, Chico, California.
Welcome to the KZFR Community Calendar. Free Master Gardener Workshop, tour of the Demonstration Garden, Friday, the 7th of June, 10 to 11:30 a.m. or an afternoon tour, 1:30 to 3 p.m. at Master Gardener Demonstration Garden, 10381 Midway, Chico. Limited to 15 participants and registration is required. Google Master Gardeners of Butte County for more information and to register. Frugal House Showcase, creative decorative ideas in a Chico home that are affordable and sustainable without sacrificing taste and artistic style. Featuring local decorators, the Frugal House is a fundraiser for the North State Symphony in partnership with Epic Homes. Friday, June 8th, opening night party, 6 p.m. Saturday the 10th, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Sunday the 11th, noon to 6 p.m. And that's all happening at 2855 Silkwood Way in Chico. We're firing up the grill. Atrium Paradise is hosting a drive-through barbecue tri-tip dinner to raise money for the Butte County Fire Safe Council on Friday the 8th from 4 to 7 p.m. The menu will be a generous portion of tri-tip baked beans, coleslaw, roll, and brownie. You can purchase your tickets by calling Atria Paradise, 872-3344. The Ground of Being with Jeannie Zandi. That's going to be Saturday the 9th, 7 to 9 p.m. at the Dharma Center, 1203 Oaks Court, Chico, California. The Community Memorial Museum of Sutter County will be hosting Natural Wonderment, Stewardship, Sovereignty, and Sacredness. That's going to be June 9th through August 19th, and that's an exhibit of Native American portraits and stories that honor and seek to protect ancestral ways of life and lands in North America.
Butte Environmental Council presents the 9th Annual Chico Bicycle